Just to get us started, I have no relationships to disclose. But I do want to mention that this project was indeed funded by Excellence in Engagement from the Office of Outreach and Engagement at Ohio State University. And one other quick note, this is probably pertinent to our gathering today. I've made the hop and the leap from the Department of Human Nutrition just recently to the College of Public Health. So it seems appropriate to mention that at this particular meeting. I haven't yet mastered, however, technology, so here we go. Okay, the name of the presentation is a pilot test of fuel for learning, and it's really interesting that Genevieve's talking about classroom-based curricula, and that's indeed what this curricula is. It's a combination of obesity and stress management. My colleague, Marianne Klatt, was not able to be here today. She really did the stress management portion. Unfortunately, we don't have all that data to share with you, so I'm going to focus on the nutrition components. What I'd like to do is talk to you a little bit about why it is that we developed this program, move into a conversation about the nutrition component in particular and how it's constructed, what's the theory base behind it, and then conclude with giving you some of the results of our pilot test. You've likely seen these data over and over again. What do they demonstrate? That we do have a problem with childhood obesity. As time marches forward, in the past 30 years, those numbers have continued to climb and escalate. If you look at the breakdown by age groups, you can see that that 6 to 11-year-old age group has had the more significant increase in the proportion of kiddos or children who are at risk or overweight, or the other terms that have been used, who are overweight and obese. In Ohio, we have the same thing. We just mirror what the national data are and have a significant number of children that are young. This happened to be third graders, about 37%, right on target with what the national data is indicating. So as you know, the big issue becomes, what are the consequences? Why be concerned about this? Certainly there are physical consequences, which are noted in that slide, but there are a myriad of psychological consequences as well as untoward economic consequences associated with childhood obesity, all of which provide compelling evidence that we do need to work diligently in trying to impact this problem. If you look at the literature about, wow, what causes this? And again, we did this to try and get an idea of how do we best approach this problem? What can we do? And what's our best plan for trying to approach the problem? Again, you'll see a myriad of factors involved, everywhere from genetics, the environment, physical activity, advertising, television, you name it. And in fact, what I think these data really lend towards is how important it is to take a socio-ecologic approach when looking at trying to make an impact in the area of childhood obesity. This is a graph taken from the 2010 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. I was so pleased to see finally we made a statement about, oh my gosh, it's beyond the individual that we must look. Amen. Absolutely right. So I'm probably going to sound like I speak with forked tongue and that I now come around and talk about intervening with the individual, but our strategy has been this. We really did want to start by looking at what we can do to modify individual factors, but utilizing the educational component as a way to create awareness in those environmental settings, in particular schools. So our hope and intent is to go out each layer as we master one layer at a time. If we look at dietary interventions that have been done, there's some really good data out there. People have been very successful, and then there's some other data out there that's just really, it makes you scratch your head, and you put it all together, and many have said, well, why do we have such mixed results? Why do we have modest results? And some have suggested, well, the design of the program might not be as strong as it could be. The implementation can be kind of challenging. You know, if you get different implementers, they have different spins on things, and each of which can cause things to go great or not so great. And then we looked at evaluation and found that some have suggested there's limits in evaluation. How do you interpret the results that you've got? Many times no theory-based is used. There's no look at a dose effect. If you get more of it, do you do better, or it doesn't matter? And it's interesting, again, time spent in schools by kiddos is second to spending time at home. So a great opportunity to impact kids is if we can get them in schools. One of the things we found, however, is that teachers were just feeling so pressured because the curricula is crowded. So we did a number of focus groups with teachers, presented our ideas, talked about trying to weave in or demonstrate how what we're doing meets their educational standards. And that proved to be a very effective inroad, is to demonstrate how these programs did so. So Fuel for Learning, the nutrition component, actually emanated from an already established program called FoodFit. This is a publication that was aimed at providing the results from our pilot study, where we were able to favorably impact some of those social cognitive theory SCT, say that five times fast in the afternoon, anyway. We were able to see some real favorable impacts. And what we did in designing FoodFit was try to overcome those limitations we saw. We had a theoretical basis. It was social cognitive theory. You're saying to yourself, wait, what's that trans-theoretical model in red? We added that to Fuel for Learning. We said, you know, there seems to be some traction here. Let's see if we can integrate that in. I'll share with you how we did that in just a moment. Training program personnel is a great point Genevieve mentioned is, you know, how can you get things standardized with your personnel? One of the ways we thought we could do this is, painfully, we filmed everything, and we as instructors are on here, it's on a DVD format, so that all teachers need to do is put in the DVD, sit back, take off, and everything is presented to them. I wish we could bring our video outtakes. They were rather hysterical, but that would have been a lot of fun to do that, but because of time, I didn't bring them along. Anyway, our evaluation, yes, we used a theoretical basis to try and interpret our results, and we did look at a dose effect, and I'll share that with you. So what is the nutrition component going after? It is adaptive for food fit. It specifically addresses the AMA Expert Committee guidelines, behaviors thought to be important for the prevention of childhood obesity. And so what are we looking at? Lower calorie snacks, packaged snack foods, one serving, with all the time spent at Costco's and Sam's and whatnot, and big bulk servings, and in our expanded food nutrition education programs, our federally sponsored nutrition net programs, we say buy large quantities, but read the label. Well, sometimes that doesn't always interpret to people that that big bag is not one serving. There are multiple servings in one big bag, so we wanted to hit that. How do you choose drinks without added sugar and cereals low in sugar? How to get, and this is almost like shooting ourselves in the foot, but we said let's rise to the occasion. Not just three vegetables, but three different vegetables. Not just three fruits, but three different fruits because of the importance of the differing phytochemicals. New to Fuel for Learning, three servings from the milk group or milk alternatives, and healthy foods for breakfast were lessons that were added. Now, just to share with you, this is the visual diagram of how that social cognitive theory works. Ooh, that's a busy slide, but as is much human behavior, it is pretty busy and somewhat complex. What we attempted to do was pick out the constructs that we felt were most important, and what we did was go after behavioral capabilities, or the skills and knowledge, self-efficacy, confidence in performing those skills, and outcome expectancy, value placed on those outcomes. We wanted to see if we could purposefully impact those constructs in that they're thought to be mediators to behavior change. So we really did a task analysis for each lesson where the behavior was the targeted behavior and hence the name of the lesson. And what we did was dissect what are the sub-skills that a child would need to master to be able to perform that behavior, and that's what each lesson attempted to do. This is just showing you the first one, just to give you an example. Oh my gosh, you thought the first one was messy? Look at that one. But what this is meant to demonstrate is We very purposefully use specific techniques, things like positive reinforcement, vicarious reinforcement, where children observed the model who was doing the behavior being reinforced by another so that they could feel, and then they practiced the behaviors, and then they could experience the positive reinforcement. We also had them doing role plays, which is one of the most popular parts. Oh, I want to do it. Where they would get up, say to their peer why they wanted to have a healthy snack, and then they did so with their parents. It was very exciting to us to see them get all jazzed up about role plays. We thought we might have a tough time, but oh my goodness, we did not. This was the structure of each lesson: intro, benefits, consequences. We did have them do taste testing. It was really fun to watch them eat raw broccoli. I thought we'd have lots left over. We did not. Trans-theoretical model, we did weave this in. We did it making some assumptions. The kids would probably be in pre-contemplation, in the contemplation stage, and hence we sought to utilize what are called the processes of change, noted in red, and we wove them into each of the different sections of the lesson. And I won't go through the nitty-gritty details here, but other than to show you, yes, this occurred in each of the lessons. We wove in these particular activities to demonstrate the constructs or to try and change the constructs. We did ensure that the lessons did meet a variety of educational standards, which again was very important to allow the principals to say, yay, okay, we're in, we want to do this with you, and for the teacher's receptivity as well. Because of time, I won't march through all of these, but we'll give you just a few of the examples in the different areas, including language arts, math, and as well, I think there's one on wellness that I just skipped through. So here's how it was set up. It's a DVD. Instruction was on the video. We had a little toolkit that went along with it. There are 8 lessons, and here's how each week went. Day 1, they did nutrition ed. It was about 35 minutes, which I just shared with you. But then they also did 10 minutes yoga and movement. That 10 minutes of yoga and movement was repeated on days 2, 3, and 4. And on day 5, they did a culminating, what we might call a culminating activity. And just to give you an example, the last lesson 8 culminating activity was, we've talked about all these different things. Share with us what you think ought to go into your healthy toolbox. So the idea was, again, that the program was set up to impact behavioral capability, self-efficacy, and stages of change, and as theory holds, if we are successful in impacting any of those constructs, we ought to see behavior change, again, according to SCT, and we ought to see some changes in dietary behaviors. So what did we find? First, a little bit about the pilot test itself. Quasi-experimental weightless control group design, 3 treatment, 3 control. The third grade students were our primary target. We had 6 classrooms, again, 3 treatment, 3 control. If you look at the number of students, 137. We had 6 classroom teachers, again, 3 treatment, 3 control. And then we also looked at parents. This is, again, these were secondary subjects, so to speak. 1 parent of each child had the opportunity to participate. 57 parents jumped on board, 32 from treatment, and 25 from control. Given that we were trying to impact behavioral capability, self-efficacy, stages of change, and then dietary behaviors, we did measurements of each of those particular indices, or constructs rather, and this just shows you the instrumentation used for all the different target groups. Because of time, I won't share a lot about this, but I had this was a master student thesis, but under this master student, we had 42 undergraduates that she was supervising to help in the data collection phases. I now have 5 of these kids that are doing undergraduate honors theses based on this data set. So it's a wonderful experience for all. Of course, I'm getting white, but you know, anyway, it was a lot of fun. These are, the different instruments, and because of time, I won't march through all of them, and I apologize for that. Someone had asked, how do you collect information on kids' eating behaviors? We took the instrument, the food behavior checklist that was developed by Townsend out in California, And we created the child modified, actually another colleague had started with that, child modified food behavior checklist. 11 yes, no questions, we coded them 1 and 0 for desirable, undesirable. The downside of this is that it doesn't ask questions on some of the things that we were going after, but it is pretty well validated. Townsend did this with adults, used biomarkers, so very nice work done there. We actually published a study where it showed reasonable reliability, validity for kiddos. Always room for improvement, though, when it comes to third graders. It's a tough group to get some solid and valid data on. Behavioral capabilities, we had 16 questions, essentially 2 questions per 8 behavior. Self-efficacy, 8 questions. We actually had more questions, but it proved to be much more difficult for kids. They had a hard time. So we just had 1 SE question per behavior, and really the same thing with stages of change. And you see in the example, this is how it went. I eat lower calorie snack foods, and each response represented a different stage of change, and they were in a circle of one that best described them. So here are some results. First of all, the demographics, and I'm not asking you to see if your eyes work well, but let me share what the bottom line is here. The kids we had a reasonable split, and their ages were similar, no big news there. They're all in third grade. Male, female was pretty much the same. BMIs appear as though they might be different, but honestly, we've done the statistics. These groups are similar. There's no significant differences between them. One thing to note is what proportion may be overweight or obese, about 32%, so it's a little bit lower than what we had seen or what we've seen from the most recent national statistics at a little over 37%. What do we have in terms of participation? If you look across the lessons, about the lowest, I believe, was in the low 80s. There it is at 82.9%. So we had 80% participation and above. And having done a lot of work in after-school programs, and hats off, it's very challenging but very rewarding. This is a marked improvement than sometimes what we would see in after-school, so that you have a little bit more of a captive audience. So here are statistics, set p-value at less than 0.05. We did some post-hoc analysis, 0.05. Let me get on to the bottom line. What do we find? Behavior capability, self-efficacy, yes, significant changes. Stages of change, not a bit, at least according to the instrumentation we used. And we were pleased to find that, yes, the kids reported some changes in their dietary behaviors. But we wanted to find out, okay, let's find out if indeed there's any dose relatedness to this. You know, is this a spurious event, and is the change in the direction we want? So with the behavioral capabilities, you'll see those that received 7 and 8 doses did markedly better than those that received 0. So that's a step in the right direction, favorable. The self-efficacy, this is why we wanted to do the dose work and take a look. We had a couple of ringers there in the 5-dose area, and they're the ones that really showed the statistical significance. If you go up and look at the rest of the kids, really not a whole lot of change there. So again, the importance of doing this post-hoc work to look at things more closely. It doesn't appear that self-efficacy changed markedly vis-a-vis this instrumentation. Behavioral capabilities, yes, again, markedly so. How about when we look at this more closely, where did they change in terms of behavioral, their food behaviors? And what we find was vegetables and reading labels. They had a significant change in their self-reported behaviors about vegetable consumption and about reading labels, as opposed to in the fruit area, milk area, sugar sweetened beverages, not so much. Now you look at the milk and say, oh my gosh, most of these kids were already consuming requisite amounts of milk, and most of these kids were already consuming breakfast. I share with you I'm technologically impaired. And this is indeed a case to demonstrate that point. We only had 3 teachers in each of the groups, and we really actually did this to see how well is this going to work when we get ready to do a statewide dissemination. Will the teachers be receptive? How's this going to work? And It worked very well. Of course, we didn't see much change other than we did have one of the control teachers that had demonstrable changes. And we think he skewed our data, but nonetheless, this wouldn't be really relevant data since we have three in each group. Parent information was very interesting. They did not demonstrate any market changes, obviously, as seen by this instrumentation in the reported dietary behaviors, but stages of change, we saw significant changes. They felt more ready to change their behaviors when it came to sugar-sweetened beverages and in portioning out one size of a snack food from a larger item. We did do evaluation surveys. We had 15 questions, 5 responses, strongly agree to strongly disagree. We wanted to get the parents in both the treatment and the control group, since this is a waitlist design, we did so. And their mean ratings responses were very similar, almost identical, which gave us some good data on receptivity by parents. The kinds of questions, this program was beneficial for my child, I would recommend the program, and you see the mean response was 4. In terms of questions that targeted child food behaviors, and you see the examples, mean response was 4. Question targeting parent food behaviors, mean response was 3, except for that treatment group, we had more parents saying that they strongly agreed that they learned strategies to make healthier food choices. When we look at their survey comments, again, the richness of qualitative data cannot be understated, where you may have limitations in quantitative, and I think we saw that with some of our work. We see in this qualitative data some very interesting commentaries being shared by parents. Active engagement in learning invaluable, child felt empowered, and these are buzzwords that we were thrilled with, because that's exactly what we're trying to do, is help a child feel more empowered. He also reads ingredients of items, recognizes we eat too much junk, seems to be limiting himself, pays attention to how many fruits and veggies. So some real positive feedback. One thing I did want to bring to your attention, however, is the last comment that we need to be aware of. And this was the only, I would call it, less positive comment, but one that we need to acknowledge, and we've had subsequent conversation about this. I think they're too young to care or worry about what's healthy for them. They're not supposed to worry about these things for a few years. Kids are supposed to eat snacks, candy, and junk foods. So it's very interesting that we take note of that and understand the need for parent education, done albeit tenderly. So this, what we've concluded thus far, we were able to successfully implement this with good receptivity in the classroom. It was relatively minimal training. What do we mean minimal? We had an hour with the teachers. 1 hour, that's it. And we wanted to do that to see, is this going to fly? Because we're lucky to get 1 hour with a large group. Our next thing will be, can we do instruction online? And can we post it, and will it work as well? We saw improvements in behavioral capabilities, and those improvements we saw in behavioral capabilities corresponded to changes in dietary behaviors, which we were pleased with. No changes in teachers, but we didn't expect that to be the case because the sample size is too small. No changes in eating behaviors for the parents, but again, parents weren't our primary target. This was a secondary target. We just wanted to follow them and see what we got. Certainly building programming to address them is important and something we plan to do in the future. What I have noted here in italics are things that happened. We didn't track them, darn it, but are things we might do so in the future. At one of the schools, the snack offerings that were provided at lunchtime, the teachers went to the food service folks and said, you know what, why don't we get some more fruits and vegetables in here? Just what you want to see happening. The teachers also reported back to us unsolicited that the quality of the lunches being brought in by the kids were changing. The particular snack foods that would be coming in the packages of chips and such were starting to get to be, you know, carrot sticks and things of that sort, because that's what we were promoting in some of the lessons. And the parents were very supportive, teachers very supportive of programming, which is very favorable, and we were pleased at. But again, we know This is socio-ecological. This is one little dent in the chain of events that needs to occur, and we hope to be able to move on to the environmental settings to create those environments that would enable the kids to be able to enact these behaviors longer term. Some of our instruments weren't validated. Our food behavior checklist didn't include the items that we were targeting. Again, new program, we didn't intend to do follow-up, but we certainly need to do that. In our food fit lessons, we found that 6 months out, everything retained. In fact, labeling got better, reading labels got better, which was, gosh, it was wonderful. They got worse at looking at portion sizes, but just like the American population, we're not doing much better at that with adults or children. Sample size is small, it's a quasi-experimental, and we did have treatment and control in the same school, so we may have seen some bleeding effects. Thank you very much. I ran through that in record time. I'm sorry to have done so, but let me ask you what questions you might have. Yes. Absolutely. Ready? It's pretty straightforward. It's GKAYE at, then it's CPH, stands for College of Public Health, .osu.edu. You bet. Shoot me an email. Glad to get back in touch. Sure. Yeah, the focus of the stress prevention program was, it was yoga and movement. So kids would be doing, and it wove in some of the things that we were doing. Let me give you an example. It's going to sound kind of funny, but the kids loved it. We were talking about milk and dairy. And so my colleague, Dr. Clapp, Marianne Clapp, is doing things like yoga movements, and so she's stretching and moving. In this particular one, she's down on all fours, and she said, we talked about dairy. Dairy reminds me of cows. Let's all be cows, and she's having them do cow movements, right? But it's all stretching and breathing, and then she moves into, you know, cows are in herds, and herds are like friends. What friends help you feel good about yourself? And it moves into that, and that's how we've integrated the program together. Kids loved it. They really enjoyed it. Some kids found it challenging to do some of these movements. And so what the stress part is looking at is, what are the children's perceived levels of stress, and then a reflection of, from the teacher point of view, the Connors is what's being used. Thank you. Thank you very much.